Welcome back. And don't forget, the fun doesn't stop here. Tune in tonight, George Knapp interviewing Joseph Farrell, one of my favorite guests, talking about the secret space program. That's right, the Gemini space program, the Mercury space program, Apollo, the space shuttle, all window dressing, a camouflage for what was really going on backstage in this, as I say, secret space program. Joseph Farrell with George Knapp. Later tonight on Coast to Coast. REM bringing us back with "It's the End of the World as We Know It." Well, not quite. Sometimes, though, I couldn't blame you for waking up and thinking that. Just remembering that rant from Howard Beale in my favorite movie, Network. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keeping a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. Anyway, you know the drill. Listen, when we come back, my guest, Greg Palast, will take your phone calls. I know a lot of you want to have at him for his earlier comments about election fraud and the omission of error, the error of omission, rather, not mentioning George Soros. So if you want to get that said, please, the phone lines are available to you. And we'll also talk about these vulture funds, which are essentially extorting development money away from countries like Liberia, where there is a cholera epidemic. And what they need more than anything is clean water. And yet these vulture funds are essentially holding a gun to their head saying, pay us $28 million or we will hold up these development projects. It's scandalous and unconscionable. And Greg Palast will tell us all about it when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. And we are back here on Coast to Coast AM. Greg Palast, my guest, and Vultures and Vote Rustlers is volume two of his DVD series, Greg Palast Investigates. And Greg, once again, how can people get a copy of that?
The only way to get Vultures and Vote Rustlers right now is to go to Greg Palast, that's GREGPALAST.com, because I'm only doing it for the Foundation for Investigative Reporting. You can make a donation, tax deductible, better than for a drone, I suppose. That's at gregpalast.com. There's a 95-second trailer. That's fun itself. Check it out. The other is, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. New York Times bestseller. You can get at any bookstore, Amazon, the usual suspects.
All right. You've lit them up, as they say, full board of lines. But before we get to the calls, and for those of you who have a line, hold on to it. Thank you for your patience. I got to ask you, Greg, I mean, you must get very cynical doing this type of investigative reporting. And I'm wondering, do you have any heroes in politics? Is there anyone wearing a white hat as far as you're concerned?
Not many heroes in politics. You know what their heroes are? They're people like Bradley or Chelsea Manning, whatever you want to call them, the whistleblowers, people like Ed Snowden who are telling it, who are letting the stuff out and putting themselves on the line, willing to go to jail for the rest of their lives. I go around the world. I had whistleblowers tell me about, people calling me from and sending me messages from, these horrible oil dictatorships controlled by BP. I mean, these people are literally, they get beaten. I've had, I was told about George Bush's gold mine in Tanzania. After that, the guy, my source, was charged with sedition. His law partner, he's a lawyer, his law partner was beaten up. These people are, there's a lot of people out there who give me the information, who put themselves on the line, who really are, facing down the dangers. These are really heroic people. Guys running for office, they're not heroic for nothing. They want your vote. There's some that aren't completely corrupt, but they don't get very far.
All right, let's go to the wild card line, and Joe is in Brooklyn. Hey, Joe, welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Greg. The 14 years ago, you covered the election. You had this Afro-Americans were kept from the polls because they said they were felons and stuff. And the 15th Amendment of the Constitution does not cover free and fair elections. All it says is that you can't be blocked from the polls, but there's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that says we have the free and fair elections, all votes can be counted. And it's like basically one of those people believe that all votes have to be counted, and they don't, because nothing, it passed the constitutional test, and the Supreme Court picked George Bush in a way because it wasn't brought up evidence that the people were obstructed from voting. You'll be said to hang in Chad, and the votes were counted was actually perfectly legal to selectively count votes in the United States, and which is a problem. And also, people believe all sorts of hoaxes in the country. Like, for example, the Apollo moon landing is a hoax. There's no, they couldn't make it past the inauguration belt, and the land was in, it wasn't even adequate. But people apparently believe this big lie. So, and that's coming out soon. And so basically, it's like, hello?
Yeah. No, we're listening.
Well,
we're listening.
I have to say that, this is Greg Palast. There is no constitutional right to a vote, by the way. There's certain restrictions in the Constitution, like the 15th Amendment, which says that because you are a slave or you have the wrong color skin, you can't be stopped from voting. But there's actually no constitutional right that says you may vote. And it's a real hole in the Constitution, to say the least. And the only way that we fight that is that we just have to fight for our democracy every day. And we have to say everyone's vote counts, whether it's our party or someone else's party. We have to stand up and say, if democracy means anything, everyone can vote. No one gets their vote thrown out because they left the middle initial out of their absentee ballot. There's no gotcha games, none of this stuff. You know, your Chad was hung. You know what? That's a vote by an American. And I'm sorry, in America we're supposed to count the votes. That's our democracy. If it's not, you know, it's not about, and you know, if there's a hole in the Constitution, yeah, there are a lot of holes in the Constitution. We had slaveholders in the Constitution. In fact, when the Constitution was written, mostly it was people who only, you had to own property to vote. And, you know, we fought that, and we won. That's very, very important. You know, we couldn't vote. You know, so every day we fight for our liberty and our vote, and we have to keep fighting for it. You know,
Joe in Brooklyn, thank you for the call. All right, Joe, thanks for the call. Let's say, let's go to west of the Rockies. Madeline is in the Silver State, checking in from Las Vegas. Hello, Madeline. Welcome. Good morning.
Hi. Guys, I just wanted to tell you it was really funny. A couple of years ago, I got a letter in the mail telling me that there was this class action suit against J.P. Morgan for folks who had their IRAs in there. And I filled out the form and sent it. You know, I thought, what the heck, right? So a couple of years go by. Couple months ago, I opened my mailbox. I had an envelope that says J.P. Morgan on it, and I get all excited. Oh my God! Oh, this is so cool, right? I open it up, and it's 33 cents.
Yeah, exactly.
33 cents. I couldn't believe it.
That's a bitter pill.
So anyway, there was my IRA.
So there you go, Madeline.
Exactly. And these guys, yeah, this is what's happening all over America. And people lost their homes. You know, when people talk about, for example, mortgages, people are saying, oh, well, people lost their homes because they got mortgages they couldn't afford. Well, if you got a mortgage at 4 or 5% and then suddenly it blows up to 11%, even though interest rates are declining, and your mortgage rate triples, you're going to lose your house. Most people can't pay triple their current mortgage. That's what was happening. These predatory, horrible mortgages. There were lawsuits, but people are getting nickels on the dollar, while J.P. Morgan was, which was involved in these schemes. They were getting, they were getting bonuses. And yeah, that's the problem. Is that you got your 33 cents. I know. I've been involved in those class action suits, and unfortunately, that's how they end up.
All right, Madeline, thank you for the call. And in many cases, going back to these subprime loans, I'm guessing that the banks, the local bank, would know, for example, when they just send someone on their way with a 30-year mortgage, no money down, that the main employer in that area is getting ready to pull up stakes and move to Mexico. They would know that.
Well, also, the other thing is that remember that most of these subprime mortgages are given to people, it's not a question whether they can't afford it. They can't afford it once they change after, they're told that you get a balloon after 4 years, after 5 years. Don't worry about that, even though it says it's going to triple in its rate. And who can pay triple their mortgage? Don't worry about it. We'll give you a balloon and replace it. And then they don't because the factory's closed because of whatever. So they know it. But that bank has sold, see, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, these operations, when you get their mortgages, They don't keep them. They sell them off to a pension fund. They sell them off to Royal Bank of Scotland. That's what the Goldman Sachs did with J.P. Morgan. They sold $4 billion worth of bogus mortgages, mortgages they knew would blow up, to the Royal Bank of Scotland, the biggest bank in Britain, which went bankrupt when these things turned into crap. So they don't care who they're giving these loans to or why, because
nobody talks about,
they don't hold the paper.
Nobody talks about the complicity of the bond rating agencies that turn their head, hold their nose, and say, yeah, that's a triple A.
Yeah, I mean, now I should know better. I've got an MBA. I mean, I'm an economist by training. And I can wipe my behind with my Lehman Brothers bonds, which had a double A rating. You know, they were gold-plated bonds, and a week after I got them, you know, they were toilet paper. And that was the rating, and I was sold these on the basis of the rating agencies that were paid by Lehman Brothers to give them those ratings. They knew what it was.
All right, first-time caller Maria is in Jacksonville, Florida. Good morning, Maria. Welcome to Coast.
Hi. I'd like to know Greg Palast's opinion on Karen Hootis, the World Bank whistleblower, the global financial reset. Should we go with it or should we reject it? And will there be mass arrests? Will somebody like Jamie Dimon or Tim Geithner, will they be arrested amongst others?
Great call.
Will Jamie Dimon be arrested? He's playing golf with Obama. You know that Obama's played golf 95 times in his first term? I mean, and it's not because he loves golf. It's just that when you're in that golf cart with the bankers, like he would play, his favorite banking golf buddy was the American president of the United Bank of Switzerland. Because there's no one in the golf cart with them. There's no one taking notes. And that's where the business is done, in that golf cart. It's not the Oval Office. That's for show. It's the golf cart. And so those guys in the golf cart, are they going to get out of the president's golf cart and get arrested? Well, look at it this way. The president's car czar was Steve Rattner, is worth nearly $500 million. He's in the White House. He's charged with fraud and pension fund manipulation and bribery. And he's there in the Oval Office, and suddenly the charges disappear. So even when they get close, these guys aren't going down. Like I said, the Jamie, you know, this guy, John Paulson, working with Goldman Sachs, you know, deliberately sells junk mortgages, pockets $4 billion, bankrupts the Royal Bank of Scotland, and the only guy that gets busted is his assistant, his French assistant, who doesn't even know what the heck is going on. And then the ultimate punishment is he loses his broker's license. No one's going to jail because they own the police force. They're going to, read the rights to each other?
All right, Maria, thank you for the call. Let's go to the wild card line, and Al is in Iowa. Good morning, Al.
Hey, Al.
Good morning. Howdy. I got three items. One is a suggestion for a guest. He's a fellow Canadian. If you'd have Bruce Colburn, the musical artist, on sometimes. I know he used to live in Toronto. And then also for Greg, we had a number of years ago in Minnesota when we had the Senate election coming up.
Yes.
A real obscure little county way up in northern Minnesota where they only had, I can't remember the exact amount, but I believe it was 150 registered voters, and our Senator Al Franken won the Senate race, and they had 300 votes in that county. But when the Republican Party brought it to the attention of the judge of that county, he was a Democrat, he threw it out. It made it on the news. It blipped on the evening news for like one day, and then that was it. It was swept under the rug. And then a comment also on the event horizon, I just thought it was real interesting that that happened on April 20th, and then in years past in history, you have what happened down in Waco, Texas. That was right around April 19th, and then the bombing of the Oklahoma Federal Building, that was also around April 19th. And I'll take your comments off the air.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Yeah, well, like I say, games and votes are as old as apple pie and Thomas Jefferson. And this is one of the problems we have, is that in America we've lost the concept that you got to count all the votes, and only the votes, by the way, as the gentleman brought out. And this is, you know, we have to commit ourselves. Don't count on the politicians to count our votes.
150 registered voters, and Al Franken won by, so he alleges, 300 and something. I guess it must be that new math.
Yeah.
Cornelius is calling in from Louisiana on the wild card line. Good morning, Cornelius.
Good morning, Richard and Greg. God bless both of y'all. I stay along with Bible prophecy, and what I wanted to ask your guests, and maybe even you too, coming on April 15th is the four blood moons. And every time we go against Israel, something happens to us. Like in 2001, we had September the 11th. 7 years later, we had the stock market crash in 2008 in September. And so the 15th in 2015, we'll probably have something happen. But I've been listening to some news reports saying that China on the 24th of April is going to, you know, we owe them a whole lot of money. And they're going to demand their money back. So I don't know if you had heard anything about that. And if they do, then that will probably collapse our economy. And that's one reason why I think the government is giving all these bullets and guns to the postal workers, to the Department of, I can't think of the name of that, you know, the...
Well, I'm hearing that the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA,
yes,
is
they're
also...
giving all that. So it looked like they're getting ready for something. They know something is going to collapse or some huge natural disaster, and the citizens are just going to be left out in the open. So I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Cornelius, interesting call. Greg, swing
well,
away.
I can't say that I'm terrible at prognosticating and prophecy because I'm an investigative reporter, so I tend to look backwards at what's happened or what's going on inside. I can never guess on the future. I mean, obviously... we've got ourselves a problem in that we owe China $3 trillion. And, you know, so in a way, that might be the best thing that could happen. They can't let us go under because we owe them so much, right? So I don't know. I mean, obviously, we've already had some big disasters. I mean, we did lose the city of New Orleans. But, and that's, you know, that's not minor when we lose that city. And I've written about that, about, you know, how the White House had gotten word that an emergency word from the head of the Hurricane Center, a guy named Ivor von Heerden, that at any minute the levees, any strong storm, the levees could blow in New Orleans, as they did. They had that warning 18 months before the levees blew. So, you know, it's we are not protected. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but the question was, are we protected by the people we pay to protect us? I'm not very comfortable with that at all. They're running around. The NSA is running around saying that they're protecting us by you know, reading our emails and looking at our webcams. I don't think that that's what's protecting us. I'm very concerned.
Much safer too. I feel much safer. International line. I think we can squeeze Al in from Vancouver very quickly. Al, good morning.
Sure, man. Question or two questions. What does Mr. Palast think will happen with the Canadian dollar with all of this trouble that's coming? And does he think that the Canadian banks and the Canadian government are actively working in the behind-the-scenes shenanigans?
Well, I can't say that. I haven't been following the Canadian dollar, I'll be honest. Actually, Richard would know much better than me. I've been following the Greek dollar at this point.
For better or worse, we have hitched our star to the U.S. wagon. So as goes the dollar, so goes the Canuck dollar. Listen, Greg, hold on. When we come back, we will talk about these vulture funds and how they're preying on developing nations. And if you have a line, hold on to it. We'll get to you as well. My conversation, your conversation with Greg Palast continues on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, and we will get to your calls. If you've got a line, hold on to it. Greg Palast, waiting in the wings. I'm continuing to get angry texts and missives asking me to push Greg harder on George Soros and his involvement in all of this. They think Greg is giving George a pass and coming down too hard on the Koch brothers and Karl Rove et al. So when we come back, we'll give Greg another chance to take a swing at that one. Now, in the studio here, my technical producer, Laura, was looking at the TV monitor and said that there are reports of hail in Saudi Arabia and snow in India. And, I mean, what a crazy, crazy winter this has been. In December, as I recall, 2013, they had snow in Cairo, the first snow there in 100 years. And I was recently involved in a roundtable debate on global warming, and they're actually now blaming this strange cold weather on global warming. If you can figure that one out, please help me, because I'm at a loss. But, of course, now it's not global warming, it's climate change. And climate change is responsible for everything. However, that's another show. We'll get back to this show with Greg Palast on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. And we are back here on Coast to Coast AM. Richard Serrett, your guest host for this evening and this morning. And Greg Palast, my guest. Full board of lines, and I want to get to as many of you as I can here. But I do want to talk about these vulture funds, because I just think this story is absolutely unconscionable, and this is something that people need to know about. Greg, tell me about these vulture funds and how they prey on the most vulnerable people in our society, these people that are making pennies a day in many of these developed countries around the world.
Well, what we have is a group of financiers. Unfortunately, too many of them are Americans, billionaires, who figured out through bribery, intimidation, legal flim-flam, get their hands on old debts which were issued by nations in the middle of or before, like, a civil war, a disaster, an epidemic, a famine. And then what happens is that these nations have big debts. You and I write off the debts. When I say you and I mean the United States government says, okay, the Congo doesn't owe us $80 billion anymore. We're just going to forgive it because we went through a civil war, there's a cholera epidemic, and we're going to give you money for medicine to pay off to take care of the cholera epidemic. This is a true story in the Congo. You then get these vulture funds, these guys who pull out these old debts that they got, again, through bribery. You're not talking about, like, honest stuff. Talking about through bribery, they find these old pieces of paper that they bribe some local official with, and they literally say, oh, that money for the cholera medicine, that goes to me. In Zambia, the money for the AIDS medicine, that goes to me. So you and I think that we're being very charitable, and the United States government, like Bush, forgave all this debt to Africa so they could fight the AIDS epidemic. What we haven't been told is that that money ended up in the pockets of all these financial vultures. How they do it is really complex, brilliant flim-flam, but it is brilliantly vicious. And, for example, I know that Richard, with your own family connection, you know about what happened with the vultures in Greece. Greece was being squeezed by the European unions, by the Europeans and Germans, and the Greek economy collapsed because they foolishly hooked the Greek economy after thousands of years at the drachma. That wasn't good. It was good enough for Plato, but they ended up throwing that out for the euro. The Greek economy collapsed. And while Greece was on its back, an American vulture, Paul Singer, and another guy named the Bass Brothers, grabbed a hold of some debts owed by Greece. All these banks agreed to work out a deal, but they said, no, we've paid 20 cents on the dollar for Greek debt, but now you're going to pay us 200%. We want 10 times what we paid right now, or we're going to bring down Greece and every bank in Europe when we declare a default. They basically held Greece and the entire European banking system hostage, and they got their money from a nation on its back.
Meanwhile,
teachers are looking for food out of garbage cans, and these guys took $160 million out of the Greek treasury. They got every penny that they demanded in ransom. These guys are creepy, and in some nations, that activity is considered illegal. I wish it were true in the United States.
Well, let's talk very briefly about Liberia. You mentioned Liberia, and they were embroiled in this horrible, bloody civil war. You had warlords running the country, killed off 10% of the population. And while this bloodshed is going on, one of these vulture funds in the U.S. basically sues Liberia in court in the United States, and of course, no one from Liberia shows up. They're in the midst of, you know, a total
chaos. There's no government. They were warlords. You know, the so-called president at the time is now in prison. He's the guy running diamonds, illegal diamond trade. He tried to get some action from the Naomi Campbell by giving her diamonds the rough. She thought they were just crappy rocks and trying to throw them away. And $1 million worth of diamonds. This guy literally, and he had an army of children. You're talking about, I saw 11-year-old kids with AK-47s. And then 12-year-old kids with missing an arm because they'd been in battles. This was the government, right?
Right.
And this was the so-called government, a place completely falling to pieces. These guys grabbed some old debt. No one even knows if this stuff is for real. They just found these pieces of paper and claimed that the government owed this poor nation owed them money. When the nation recovered and the United States gave and the European community gave billions of dollars to try to reconstruct this nation, these guys moved in and said, that money's ours.
And in the case of Liberia, in the case of Liberia, it's $28 million, which may not sound like a lot here in the West. But what does $28 million buy you in Liberia?
Life. I mean, you're talking about people who had the $28 million was for them truly life and death. They were literally, and I went like the Congo too, where they were trying to stop a cholera epidemic. They needed to clean the water system. Oxfam said that they needed that money to clean, that they could put in clean pumps, they could save 250,000 children if they had that money. 250,000 children's lives could be saved if they had that money to prevent the cholera epidemic. I was in those tents at the hospitals with the kids with cholera, you know, and these characters took the money that the United States government gave to this government, and they grabbed that money and put it in their pocket. And you have to understand, how do they get these pieces of paper? Say, well, they owe the money. No, these nations don't owe the money. They got a hold of these bonds, these old debts, by paying bribes to corrupt ministers from other governments, guys who are now in prison. These basically got involved in criminal enterprises. We're supposed to pay these guys off.
And then they sue the company in an American court.
You know, and I got to tell you, the FBI came to me, right? And I gave them the information. The FBI actually said, we want your information. We really want to arrest these guys. But they're so mobbed up with – these are billionaires. They're not going to arrest these billionaires. So you know what the FBI did? They just let the investigation go until the statute of limitations had run out. Said, oh, there's nothing we can do. The statute of limitations run out. They sat on the evidence.
Well, one of these –
but I think they were told to sit on the evidence. That's the problem.
One of these vulture funds is called Debt Advisory International, and it's headed by a guy who goes by the name Goldfinger.
Yeah.
Tell me about Goldfinger.
Think about the movie Goldfinger is Santa Claus compared to the real Goldfinger. The real Goldfinger is a real piece of work. This guy, I've found him bribing the Prime Minister of Bosnia to help this scam of literally lifting the cholera medicine money from the Congo. If that sounds complicated, these guys play seven-dimensional chess. Again, the FBI came to me and said, what can you, you know, give us the information? But then they don't act on it. The reason is that you have some of the most powerful people in the world, billionaires, who are involved in these schemes, and they protect the guys like Goldfinger, who are the guys running around making the drops on the bribes, you know. And, you know, so like I say, so you might have some honest FBI agent who wants to get on it, but he can't beat the White House. We had Congressman Conyers actually went into George Bush's office after he heard one of my reports and said, what about this report? He actually showed him my report to Bush. Bush said, I don't know anything. So he called the FBI, right? But you know what? These are guys who are the biggest donors to the Republican Party and the biggest donors to the Democratic Party. So what are you going to do?
There you go. Thank you. I'm going to give you one more time to take another swing at the big money behind the Democrats who are looking to steal elections at equal time. So enough of Karl Rove and the Koch brothers.
Well,
if it's not George Soros, then who is it?
Okay. Well, number one, you've got, like I said, Robert Rubin, who made $110 million. By taking down Citibank and the United States, you know, basically took down the Treasury and sliced off $110 million. You got to look at Robert Rubin. J.P. Morgan was behind the rise of Barack Obama. Citibank, J.P. Morgan, and Penny Pritzker, who is the billionaires. She's worth $3 billion. Now our Secretary of Commerce. She ran a predatory bank in Chicago, and she bought herself a United States senator named Barack Obama and said, I'm going to make you president, and as her way of getting even with the federal government for taking away her license to operate a bank. She was charged $400 million. She and her brother, the largest fine, personal fine ever levied against anyone in the United States, $400 million. You know what? For those people, it was pocket change. You and I, $400 million personal fine. It was nothing to her, but all it did was get her angry. And now this woman who has literally been fined as one of the biggest bank criminals in the United States is our Secretary of Commerce. That's what's backing the Democratic Party. Okay, so the last thing I'm going to do is tell you that somehow, oh, look at the Republicans. They're owned by the Koch brothers and all these other characters. Yeah, that's true. But I'm not going to tell you that the Democratic Party hasn't been bought and sold down the river the same way. Just a different group of characters. Though some cases, same group. Because you know what? I'll tell you, whoever heard of Bill Clinton? How's a governor of Arkansas become president of the United States out of nowhere? The answer is he wrote an organization called the Democratic Leadership Council. And that's what Bill Clinton wrote into the White House. Who started the Democratic Leadership Council? $100,000 from the brothers Koch. They're not Republicans, the Kochs. They are Kochians. They will support Republicans or Democrats. They don't bet on horses. They own the racetrack. That's how it works. They're not partisan, these guys. They play the money. It's not Republican or Democrat.
I agree with you. We don't have a two-party system. It's one monster with two heads. Let's go back to the wild card line and say hello to Jan in Brooklyn. Good morning, Jan.
Hey, Jan.
Hi. You were talking about the auto people, auto parts. Aren't there like antitrust laws that these people could be brought up on charges for?
They're inside. The government wrote them the check. They were extorting the government. But, look, one of the problems is, like, one guy, Dan Loeb, personally made over $1 billion on this scam of holding the U.S. Treasury hostage by saying we're going to bring down the whole auto industry. His name is Dan Loeb. He was one of Obama's biggest donors in 2008, then became one of Romney's biggest donors in 2012. These guys are owning both. Like I say, they don't bet on horses. They own the whole racetrack. And so it's hard to get them. If you have, like I say, I have FBI agents who come to me. I work for 26 attorneys general of the United States who've often gone after the bad guys. But, the political word comes down, these cases die. I can't tell you how many cases I worked on. That's why I stopped working for the government. I mean, I work on a case. We have someone. We get him nailed. We have an indictment, just like David Rainey of British Petroleum. He was indicted for obstruction of Congress. Believe me, that's going to just disappear. It's just going to disappear.
Jan in Brooklyn, thank you for the call. Richard
is in
Corpus Christi on the wild card line. Richard, welcome.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, yep. Richard. Go ahead. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
First of all, I want to say I listen to Coast all the time, and it's a courageous program. But this guy, wow, what was your name?
Greg Palast, G-R-E-G-P-A-L-S.
You are one courageous son of a gun.
My sources are, but thank you.
I've been writing about BP for a couple of years, about 3.5 years now. And, J.P. Morgan is the largest shareholder of BP. That's what I understand. So, right after the BP eruption, people died, and now people are tripping off of 30-story buildings. I'm wondering if you might comment on that, especially since $55 billion of American profit goes to the Queen and is shared with Putin. Thank you.
All right, Richard, thank you.
Yeah, one thing is very important. I'm glad you brought that up. One reason why Barack Obama didn't say, hey, BP has killed 11 people, destroyed our coastline, you cannot operate here anymore. Why didn't that happen? The answer is because, as Obama says, Jamie Dimon is my favorite banker of J.P. Morgan. Who owns BP? J.P. Morgan. So you can't, if you're going to destroy, if you're going to punish BP, it means punishing J.P. Morgan. that ain't going to happen. Forget it. You know, so that's the problem of running it. So I'm glad this caller brought up that connection between J.P. Morgan and BP. That is at the heart of the problem, because when you look at oil companies, you're looking at big banks.
Greg, I have a question for you. Whoever starts your car in the morning, can I borrow them for a week?
Yeah, well, to me, it's the sources that are giving me this stuff that's powerful. You know, I don't think that they care about me. I'm just the conduit. And by the way, you guys got something good, go to gregpalace.com, say contact Greg. This is how I get half my stuff is from listeners and readers. You know, pick up my book, Vulture's Picnic. You also get the information. And if you, you know, just contact me if you've got some nice little document, you know, from Inside Chevron or BP or J.P. Morgan or anything else. You know, people are talking about Soros. Hey, if you got some stuff, give it to me.
All right, there's your assignment, listeners. All right, Christopher is on the wild card line, and he is in Albridge, New York. Christopher, good morning.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Patience? You guys cost me over 150 minutes in the past 3 nights. Anyway, I was in a trial here in Albridge. One of Obama's czars trespassed on my private property, issued a ticket to the destruction of my windmill device. I'm trying to invent perpetual motion. And it cost me, on a 20-year project for an illegal land use on a recent ticket, it was backed up for a 20-year fine. That's extortion. That cost me over $500,000 that I lost on to go into the trial and get this czar on the stand. Whereupon he admitted to getting his job online from Barack Obama. And I, with his confession, convicted Obama. But the next day, the Supreme Court gave Obama a pass. And they're using an International Code Council book of rules of zone regulations against America for extortion to start civil war, like your gentleman friend here, Greg, was saying earlier. And that's not the problem. Okay, afterwards they came back and they changed the zone code on the house and evicted me illegally from the house. But at the house, I had stumbled upon a tiny dinosaur, 4 inches big. This is all on my Facebook page. And I also stumbled upon a bunch of rare meteorites, approximately about 800 tons, before they sold the house. Now, the idea is, if their job is to disrupt and collapse the economy of the earth, I have enough right here in the Elbridge, New York. This is Christopher Peter Kinch, and you can see my Facebook page where all this is valid. I have enough to recover anything the governments of the world will throw away.
Well, Christopher, I'm not sure if you're trying to generate power from windmills or you're merely tilting at them, but good luck to you nonetheless in Albridge, New York, and thank you for the call. Let's say hello to Mark in San Antonio, Texas. Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. Where did the time go? It has slipped away. All of those left holding the line, my sincere apologies. Greg Palast, wow, what a journey. Thank you, and glad to be part of it. Appreciate your time tonight, Greg.
Richard, you're the best, and thank you for your courage in putting me on the air.
All right, ask me that tomorrow morning. Greg Palast, thank you. Thank you to Brian Opry, Gina Selvati, Chris Burrows, Lisa Lyon, and, of course, George Norrie, here at Talk Radio AM 640, Scott Guest, Gord Harris, and Laura Taylor. All of you out there listening, thank you for your ears. Good night, good morning.